My name is Paul Olson, and this session is on American Black poetry, poetry written by black artists. And the title of that session is Black Poetry, A Voice of Vision. Before we look at black poetry, I'd like to discuss, or have you discuss really, what poetry is. And I'm not looking for any kind of academic definition. I'm looking for, you know, how you respond from your guts with what do you think poetry is. And then I'd like to have us, and do this in a real short time, write a poem collectively. And we'll write a poem on something, on some experience that we've all shared in common, which I think limits us to Holden Village. And we'll write a short poem on Holden Village, or some aspect of it. So, let's start out. Anybody have any ideas about what you think poetry is? There's no wrong answer to this, so.
I think it's an expression of feeling.
Yeah, good. For sure, one of the things that we know is going on, and I'm going to write these words down as we go, is that there's feeling involved. I think one of the things that's happened to a lot of us in English classes is that the only thing that's involved is the intellect. You know, let's analyze this stuff. Well, analysis is worthwhile, but feeling is perhaps... Okay, good. Anything else?
An experience?
Yeah. And what happens to that... Well, that's a great word. Poetry is not supposed to be philosophical truth. It's not supposed to be beauty. It's not supposed to be persuasion. Poetry is an experience. It's about an experience, and it is also an experience in itself. And I hope when we see that when we read today, that we're going to experience something. Most of us in this room are white, and we're going to experience something of black culture that we perhaps didn't before, because the poem is an experience. Good. Anything else?
Expression.
Of
what your experience has been, or it's putting together those things.
Yeah, good. So, that's great. Just go clarify. Is that right?
Clear.
Yeah, close. Your word, an expression. Expression of that experience. There's this experience that all of us, when we have experiences, and that's how we're going to do this together first, this little poem on Holden. And the experience kind of bounces around in our head, and it's not ordered, and it's not clear, it's not really understandable until we somehow give it shape. And the poem, or any piece of literature, does that. It gives clarity and order and shape to the experience. And then, this is a wonderful phrase I heard, I wish it were mine, it was from a teacher at the University of Oregon. Criticism, and then he meant literary criticism, is consciousness after experience. I love that. And there's holes in that, but we won't look at those for now. Consciousness after experience, how many of us have had that experience and don't really understand it until we begin to articulate it? We start to share it with someone else, and we've all been in these kind of conversations, and you say, do you realize what you just said? Haven't we been in that? Well, we say things that begin to clarify, give order and shape to those experiences. So that's a really nice word for that, too. Anything else?
The same line interpretation.
Yep. Under experience, I'll write that word, too. Good. I can spell it. From now on, if anybody gives me more than one syllable word, I'm not writing it. Okay, interpretation. The same kind of thing, and now... It gives it a deeper meaning than just that glance had when we first, I guess, had the experience.
Right. You could use all of these words like for painting or music,
yep.
But poetry is strictly in words,
yeah.
Verbalization. Or.
So, yeah, part of that is...
The closer you are to the word, the harder it is to spell.
What?
The closer you are to the word, the harder it is to spell.
You've got a long piece of chalk. That's right. Yeah, you're right. Or the longer, another rule of that is the longer you teach freshman English, the harder it is to spell.
Well, poetry usually has either a certain form or rhythm.
Yeah.
And by that, I don't mean that it has to rhyme or anything like
yep.
that, but it usually has a form or a rhythm to it.
Good. Form and rhythm. And that's all part of the vehicle for giving shape and order to this experience. And also the form and the rhythm relate to this feeling. we'll look at Gwendolyn Brooks's poem, The Mother. It's about abortion. Believe, one of her lines is, that even when I was deliberate, I was not deliberate. The sound of the line suggests, believe, that even when I was deliberate, I was not deliberate. How deliberate she is to make this choice, but how confused she was to make this choice. And the rhythm and the form, yeah, that's good. Anything else?
I think of an encapsulation, except for epic poems, I think of them being small.
Intensifies. I can spell that. There you go. Yeah. It does, doesn't it? Poetry, all art does. Music does, sculpture does, painting does, poetry does. It intensifies the experience by, and we'll do that with our little hole in poem. You guys are, I expect a great poem out of you guys, because you've really got it now. Yes. Oh, you had your hand up, sorry.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I often find poetry very ambiguous. I have trouble understanding because of the words are different from the words I use in my vocabulary much of the time.
Okay, that's
and
a good...
And it's almost like it's hidden in the beautiful word.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure when we write our poem that we don't use any foreign words. By foreign, I don't mean other country. I mean foreign that are hard for us to understand. The best poems don't. They've got words that we know. How many other people just think that poetry is kind of ambiguous or hard to understand sometimes? Or
sometimes they are, but that's just like a painting. Sometimes they don't really say anything to me either.
Yeah, is life ambiguous?
Yes.
Well, I just was sort of speaking to that issue of, I don't know if I've used the word ambiguous, I'm not sure, quite sure, but often poetry will take a common experience and say it in a way that can touch people in their home.
Yep. Let's write that up here. My black Korean doesn't work as well. But most of the good poetry is about common experiences. The thing, and again, then the reflection, the literary criticism involved is, literary criticism is consciousness after experience. Those common experiences.
I think part of the reason why poetry may be considered ambiguous is my own recollections of high school English classes and poetry were analysis to the death.
Yeah. Yep. Analysis to the death, he said. And death, you said, not death, right?
Death.
Good. I think that's right. That analysis to the death, and then we forget that in poetry, for sure, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. And if you analyze, you surely must go back and read the whole thing again. One of the things we'll do today with this black poetry is just read it straight through. And then say, well, what do you experience with that? You can line by line analyze, but that's really the poet's craft. Our craft is, let's feel this whole thing. The whole. Yeah, good. Anybody else?
I just want to ask you a question. Was these some of the poems that we read last week on Wednesday and were dying to live?
Were these some of them?
Yeah. I know the mother was.
The mother is the only one.
Okay.
She's referring to a poetry dramatization that I do, and I did about 10 minutes of it in the lift, and I did the poem The Mother. The rest of the ones that we're looking at are not part of what I did there. Although some of them are part of that whole show if I did the whole thing. You want to stay here for an hour and a half, gang, and I'll do it.
Come Wednesday night.
Yeah, Wednesday night I am going to do that show. And I am going to take roll. Okay, anyone else? I saw, yeah.
As part of the language, I think very often in poems, I find a lot of symbolism and imagery.
Yeah. Well, let's write that word in big letters. Image. I'm sorry, my black pen is just about kaput. Image is the name of the game in poetry. And the image carries the truth. The image carries, I mean, image means picture, and it carries the truth of the poem. It carries the experience of the poem. And that's why the abstract language that is sometimes in poetry, I think poets would say, and poet critics would say it's not the best poetry. The best poetry is full of the concrete image that you can see or hear or taste or touch, and somehow it strikes our senses. And so we have to keep that in mind as we write our Holden poem. Anybody else before we start to write? I saw it. Okay.
Well, I'm not sure if this tells me something about poetry or not, but when I think about it, probably most of us who read could name 150 authors, and I bet we'd do well to name 20 poets. And I'm not sure if that tells me that poetry simply strikes me in a different way so that I don't remember who wrote it, or if it tells me something about poets. I don't know.
Yeah.
I often remember lines, but not the entire poem, and not necessarily who wrote it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Who wrote it?
That's good. I don't know if a poet would be happy about that, but if I were a poet, I would be.
Yeah, that maybe the poem speaks for itself, and we don't worry about who. Maybe it says something to us. I'm just not sure what it says, but I'm just thinking about that in my own mind.
Yeah, I understand that feeling.
I always think of poetry as word pictures, or a word picture.
Yeah.
It's using words to create a picture in your mind.
Yep. Yep. Okay, that's a great way to end our look at poetry, word pictures. Let's write this poem now. I'll be your recording secretary. And what we'll do is real quickly put together a poem, and I think so we can all participate, we'll put together a poem about Holden Village. Now, we can't write about Holden Village. We're not going to write an epic. So, just a real short little poem. Let's pick one thing we want to write about at Holden. Mealtime, the deer, a hike, fishing, the garbology. Yeah, so not enough people have done garbology, but we could write great poems about that. Lots of images that are fresh. Okay, pick one. We want to do it quickly because we really want to get to American Black experience. But
as community?
Community.
As community. Okay, we'll start out with that abstraction. That's a good way to start. I'm just going to bounce off of what you guys do. I use guys generically, sorry. Community, now, that's not an image. It's a good topic. Now, how do we image community at Holden?
About warm people.
All right, step number one, she said, I'm running out of juice here. Warm people. How many people have ever seen a warm person?
Okay, so this, I hope we're all warm.
Well, yeah, okay.
The wooden buildings, to me, is part of the community, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll write that over here. I'll write it over here. Wooden buildings. But let's go back to warm people. Think of the most concrete image you can think of. You can imagine me. For a warm person.
Hugs.
Hugs, great. Now we're into, I can't see a warm person.
Right.
But I can see a hug. So, boy. This black is not, there, if I press real hard. Okay, I can see a hug. What else can you see?
Smiles.
Smiles, good. Okay, thanks, Jerry.
A concrete time those have in our 10 o'clock coffee and sharing of the peace, if we want to visualize time.
Yeah, okay, so along with, we've got times for sharing, is your phrase. It's a nice phrase. Notice how I slipped that into my wife. It's a nice phrase. Keep our marriage going just strong. Okay. How do you see a time for sharing? What's the image there?
Bell.
Okay. We can hear that image, can't we? So we've got that, the bell. Rings. And what happens when the bell rings? Yeah. Let's be specific about gather. We don't have to write a great poem, but we can get as concrete as we can be, perhaps. What? Swarm?
That sounds more like flies.
Thank you.
Just keep the cap on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so when the bell rings, we've got, it's pretty, in the talks, what do we talk about? I mean, how far do you want, you get the point? We don't have to do this, but how far do you want to go with the sense of community at home? Do you talk about the weather? With people you don't know.
Yeah.
What do you talk about with your friends?
You talk about where you live.
Yeah, a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, where do you live?
Where are you going?
California.
Where do you live? Where in California?
Arcata.
How do you spell that?
A-R-C-A-T-A.
C-A-T-A. Anybody, where else does people live?
Burlington.
Tacoma. Burlington, that's way over there in Iowa. That's enough. But all of a sudden, we start talking. I mean, then images conjure up of, we got people from Burlington, we got people from Arcata and Tacoma, and their community? What are they talking about?
The world.
The flies.
Okay, yeah, they do. So in their conversation, we do indeed have that in common.
Common experience.
Yeah. We talk about the flies. What about the food? Give me a.
We talk about how we miss meat, how we wish that there wasn't tofu.
So much fiber.
You know, we talk
so
about
fiber.
Okay, we talk about. I'll give you an instead of saying fiber, we're going to say oatmeal. Do you get the point?
Uh-huh.
And how far do you go with these specific images? And the best poetry goes very far, so that the concrete picture is really clear. Then these images get all mixed together and intensified, and you've got hugs and smiles and the bell rings, and then there's talks from people from Arcata and Tacoma, I forgot the A, and Burlington. They talk about flies, they talk about oatmeal. Are we a community yet? Sort of. What else do we talk about?
We're
trying.
Children, education.
Yeah.
Family.
So,
like
lecture we heard.
We talked about worship.
Okay.
What we heard.
What'd you hear? We don't talk about worship, we talk about
God.
Swing low. I mean, or something we heard,
music.
Something.
Yeah.
Music or.
Being in transit.
Okay, so. Journeys.
Being on a journey, yeah.
Yeah, that was Scott's. Oops, there's no apostrophe in that. Let's stop there, because again, we want to get to the black poetry. But talk about flies is one level of community. And we'll experience that as we look at this poem. And then talk about oatmeal is another level of experience, and another level of community. And then we get down to journeys, and it's still a different level, isn't it? And what's the deepest level, and I don't expect an answer to this, what's the deepest level to which we go to image the sense of community? Maybe there are no topics. Maybe we go back to hugs. Maybe we go back to, you know, if you were here on, what day is today? Monday. If you were here, when did everybody leave? The big batch.
Saturday.
I mean, I was there Saturday, and I had a lot of tears. I think lots of us who have been here a little while had tears, and tears are a sense of deep community that go beyond the talks about flies, oatmeal, or even journeys. And then you can go further with that. What images convey the power and the poignancy of how community has developed? Well, then, the way to do this, and we won't do it now because, again, we want to get to this, is you take those images and just structure them, but it's the same picture. Put it in some kind of form. Do I want to talk about hugs first or last? I don't know. That's your craft. Do I want to talk about flies or oatmeal or both? I don't know. That's your craft. But together, and we even experienced it here, we have experienced on one level a poem, an unfinished poem that did or does all of what you said poetry does. Doesn't it? Does. Doesn't it? What did you say poetry did? Remember all the things that you had up here? And then we began to sense these images and put them together, and we do feel a clarified experience. Yeah, I know why I cried. My friend, yeah. Yeah, I know why I felt kind of, who's coming now? Who's gone? we experience that.
That has the makings of a good beanie song.
Well, take over there, writer. We'll leave these up here, and you're the BB song writer, then you're great. So, should we give Doris an assignment, folks? A BB song. Doris, by the way, if you don't know, is the Edmund that is in all of those BB songs in your bound book on the tables for after supper. Okay, anybody else? Are we kind of all okay with what poetry is doing? I think the first one I'd like to have us look at then is kitchenette building. Because I think the experiences of Gwendolyn Brooks, a black woman growing up in inner city Chicago, living in inner city Chicago, has some images that perhaps are different to us. And I have to stand under a light. But also by the mic. We are things of dry hours in the involuntary plan, grayed in and gray. Not very specific yet, and there's that, what does this mean? But watch the images, and then the thing of walled in and involuntary plan that, you know, I didn't volunteer to do this, and I'm grayed, okay. Dream makes a giddy sound, not strong, like rent, feeding a wife, satisfying a man. What are the images of her life? There they are in the fourth line.
Basics.
Hey, I am not going to dream. Rent, it's due. Feeding a wife, I got it, but you got it. But could a dream send up through, I love this image, could a dream send up through onion fumes, its white and violet, fight with fried potatoes and yesterday's garbage ripening in the hall, flutter or sing an aria down these rooms, even if we were willing to let it in, had time to warm it, keep it very clean, anticipate a message, let it begin? What's happening? This isn't hard. It's what do your guts tell you is going on?
But she's wondering if she can allow it to happen, if she can allow herself to dream through all the other requirements she has.
Yeah, good word too. Requirements. What's her word for requirements in the very first line?
Involuntary.
Yep, involuntary. See what great literary analysts you are? Who's going to publish a paper? Okay. We wonder, but not well, not for a minute. Since number 5 is out of the bathroom now, we think of lukewarm water, hope to get in it. That's Holden experience in a way, isn't it? Get there before the warm water is out. So now just don't read it again. We've just gone through it very fast. Just talk about your feelings. What do you know about this experience? We won't call it the black experience. There's no such thing as the black experience.
Can the poor still have hope?
Yeah. It's a question that comes out of the poem. Do we have time to let a dream in? Good. Anybody else?
It seemed to me like she wanted to dream, but finally decided at the end that no, she couldn't.
Yeah.
She saw her requirements, then she wanted to dream, and then she said, no, I've got these things I have to do.
Yep.
Is it silly to dream?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it might not be wanting to, it might be more rather not having the energy level.
Yeah.
From all the basics to be able to.
Yeah. After frying onions and cabbage and taking out the garbage, and what time is it? Am I fifth in line for this? Yeah. Okay, that's all.
It also seems like a reassuring thought. But we wonder.
Yeah. Wonderful point. This is not the first time this has crossed your mind, is it? Yeah, that's good. Then let's go to a real crazy kind of poem on the next page, 209, Communication in Whitey. I'd like to read this to you the way I've heard it read by the poet is Donnell Lee. He's a Chicago, in the 60s, one of the avant-garde black poets of America. And the Communication in Whitey, the last line, Paris Peace Talks, 1968. Just, if you'll remember the Paris Peace Talks, what was going on for about 6 months? What it was a big argument over.
What kind of table?
Yep, the shape of the table for 6 months. Okay. This is how Don, I've heard him read it. This is how Don L. Lee reads this poem. The Paris Peace Talks, 1968. Well, that undoes a lot of what we think poetry is. And that's why I titled this poetry, A Voice of Vision. And what's his vision?
A lot of noise, and there's still death in the middle of it.
Death in all this. And for 6 months, they're talking about the table, and boys are being killed. So are women and children, and men in Vietnam.
Why is it communication in YT? Does that mean white?
Yeah, but it means white tea. Mm-hmm. You know, whitey is honky is...
Derogatorily.
It's derogatory. Uh-huh. And it's who ran the show? I mean, who did all the negotiating for Vietnam?
The white men getting
sure.
together.
It's France and isn't it, historically? France and America are debating what to do with these people of color. That's the statement about the history of the world. Then let's go back to the mother. This poem is a part of, I did this in the lift the other night. Is it fair to call on anybody here that wants to read it? I mean, it's something you haven't, it might not be fair because you haven't looked at this before and all of a sudden be expected to read it. But if you'd like to, that'd be fun. Okay, good. Thank you.
Abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damp, small pulps with a little or with no hair. The singers and workers that never handled the air. You will never neglect or beat them or silence or buy with a sweet. You will never wind up the sucking thumb or scuttle off ghosts that come. You will never leave them controlling your luscious side. Return for a snack of them with goblin mother eye. I have heard in the voices of the wind the voices of my dim-killed children. I have contracted, I have eased my dim ears at the breast they could never suck. I have said, sweets, if I sinned, if I seized your luck and your lives from your unfinished reach, if I stole your births and your names, your straight baby tears and your games, your stilted or lovely loves, your tumults, your marriages, aches and your deaths, if I poisoned the beginnings of your breaths, believe that even in my deliberation I was not deliberate. But why should I whine? Wine that the crime was other than mine, since anyhow you are dead, or rather instead you were never made. But that too, I am afraid, is faulty. Or what shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled or planned or cried. Believe me, I loved you all. Believe me, I knew you, though faintly. And I loved you all.
Good job, thank you.
Yeah.
Respond. You just heard the whole poem. If poetry intensifies experience and clarifies experience, the things that you said, what's the experience?
The grief of the abortion.
Yeah. The grief. And then that line, believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate. Grief. That's good.
And she touches all the aspects of whether to try to blame it on someone else,
yeah,
or to share the blame herself.
Yeah.
And then she kind of says, what does it matter?
Yeah.
What happened to her?
There's the ambiguity of life and of poetry, isn't it? Who's to blame? Well, you were born, you lived, you died. It's just that you never giggled or, I mean, but that's not right either. And she can't. I mean, isn't that why America politically is so divided on this? And if you listen to that carefully, both sides are right and both sides are wrong. And how do you? And that isn't her issue at all. And that's a wonderful, I think, a wonderful thing about this poem. I should tell you the experience of this. In fact, this is one of the poems I perform in my dramatization. And after a couple of years ago, a lady whom I knew quite well, and I know exactly where she stands on abortion, and she's very much against it, came up to me and said, can you get me a copy of that poem? It supports exactly where I am. And then I did the show a couple of weeks later, and I also knew where this lady was on abortion, and she was on the other end of the pole, and she said, can you get me a copy of that poem? It's exactly where I stand on abortion. And the point is, it isn't political.
Personal.
It's personal. Yes.
Deeply personal.
And it, yes. And you said it nicely. Deeply, deeply, deeply three times. Personal. Good. It's the grief. Yeah. Anything else?
I love the line, "You turn for a snack of them with gobbling mother eye."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many, raise your hand, how many of you have done that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you put them to sleep and it's the only time they look good. You go back and say, wow. Yeah. Return for a snack of them. Good.
Her feelings are so personal that I tend to want to believe that she had been a mother. It seems to me that it would be terribly difficult for somebody who had never experienced motherhood to get that much feeling.
You're saying the poet herself as opposed to the speaker, or the poet is a mother. You're right.
It sounds like she's had more than one. Mm-hmm. She speaks of the world.
Mm-hmm. And how can a woman who is so obviously in grief over this abortion, believe me, I loved you, and I knew you, though faintly, and I loved you all, how can she have more than one abortion? How can she do that?
But there's a question there. It says, though why should I whine that the crime was other than mine? It makes you wonder if, what made the crime other than hers that she should whine? Was it society and that she was poor and couldn't afford it, or, you know, is she retarded and so they forced her to have an abortion?
Yes.
What made that happen?
Good. And then we put it in, if not the black experience, at least the experience of the poor. And one of the worries that I've heard expressed, I would do it again. I do it again.
It's got a very spiritual air about it, too. It's like the questions of having stopped your life in midstream.
Yeah.
The guilt.
Yeah. I might throw out there that in our evaluation of art, I'll speak about poetry and other kinds of literature, if it doesn't speak spiritually, it's not a good piece of art. It's a political tract, or a sociological tract, or an historical glimpse. But to speak to the spiritual complexities and ambiguities of the human experience is what good art has to do. That's why we, you know, when we hear music, it's more than the lyrics, you know, because it's something else gets to us, and that's the power of art. And you're right about this poem. I saw him, but yeah.
Well, I think it speaks to where some of us are on this whole issue of basically being against abortion, and yet, if you work in the schools and see the children who are there who are not cared for, you wonder if it'd been better if they'd never been born. I mean, you know, you're at that quandary of what is right, you know? What is the right thing when you... I think she is suffering with that, you know?
Yeah.
What is the right thing?
And think... I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Think how... I mean, again, I encourage you to think of this line, believe. I mean, this is a deliberate act that has a beginning and an end. Believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate. And how, that's a profound spiritual sense, I think, of that's the wilderness experience that we talk about this morning's Bible study. It's that walk in uncertainty and doubt and mystery, and I have to make a decision that's going to have concrete results, but I have nothing concrete to base it on.
It seems that has two ways to look at it. On the one hand, you could say I was not deliberate and that I did not think it through all the way. And the other side could be I was not deliberate in that deliberately hurting, killing, that image there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't need to take a stand on which interpretation. The ambiguity is deliberate.
Because with saying pro-choice and women do it because they feel they have no choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They choose the abortion because they have no choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's nicely put.
I think sometimes.
What?
Not always, do they?
Not always what?
They don't always. They sometimes have a choice.
They often don't see that choice.
No, but I mean, sometimes for the
poor women,
for poor people, they take it because their whole life is such that they feel they don't have any other choice to make.
Mm-hmm. Did this speaker, I don't mean the poet now, but whatever the voice of this poem is, have this abortion with, you know, flippantly, with glibness?
Doesn't seem so.
Well, there's another part to that too, though. Mm. You wouldn't know necessarily that you would have these feelings until you had done it. Later, in retrospect, looking back.
Yeah.
So.
Good. That's good.
It's the first line. Oh, what you forget.
Right.
You have to have something to forget
right.
In order to not be able to forget.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's good. That's nicely put too.
Sure. I appreciate the kind of honesty that she has, though, about these aborted fetuses when she says things like, I knew you, though faintly. It isn't as if she's purporting to them, you know, a real close knowledge. There's another line that slipped away. It's in the the voices of my dim kill children.
Yeah.
It's a real nuance there.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. Dim kill children, and I knew you, though faintly.
Huh? Somehow I'm not convinced by the last lines.
That I loved you?
That she really loved him.
Oh.
Oh.
I am.
I see the women are...
Because
women
the whole thing is going there. The whole thing is going there, and then it's almost like a switch. There's been too much said in the other.
That's the way it is.
How can you tie those two? I know it's talking about paradox, and feelings and things like that.
But that's the point. It is feelings, and they're not all on one side of the issue. It's the tug between the two.
I just thought of a phrase that fits our analysis here. The poem is the paradox. Mm-hmm. And that paradox speaks loudly.
I think her ability to visualize the children as singers and workers, her ability to, she kind of has a sympathy of almost giving birth to the children in the second kind of paragraph.
Yeah.
I think that sets you up for the last few lines.
Mm-hmm.
That is where you see the love, that ability to image the children.
And yet, I have contracted. That's deliberate. So,
do we think about it in the terms of middle class women, white women? Do you think about this poem in that context?
See, I don't.
Do you think about that at all?
Do I personally? Or are you saying does it
do
mean?
Do we?
I don't know how to answer that, but...
I'm looking at it and thinking of it that way. It's easy to think about the poor black woman that has to do this.
Mm-hmm. Why couldn't you, though? What in here says this has to be a poor person? I agree. I think we came with that mindset.
Black poetry, a vision of, right.
But why couldn't this be just as well, for some reason,
a middle-class white woman?
Yeah.
They have abortions, too.
So do upper-class white women. Well, yeah. And the first line is surely universal. Abortions will not let you forget.
It doesn't say that she was poor, does it? I know. It doesn't say that.
It doesn't say that.
No.
We know something
about garbage in the halls or anything.
Right,
those
right.
Images.
There are no images of poverty. Mm-hmm. Though something drove her to this. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be poverty. Mm-hmm. What if she, okay, in one black context, and it, you know, who's that? I can't think of her name. The Canadian author who just says, don't mind the answer, just live the questions. Live the question, what if she didn't want her children to grow up in the face of racism? Period. I mean, don't answer it. It was just a question. What if she didn't want her children to grow up in the face of an alcoholic father? What if, I mean, you can ask thousands of questions. That is not the issue. The motivation for the abortion isn't the issue. You said it at the beginning. It clarifies experience. It intensifies it. One of my teachers said it. Criticism is consciousness after experience. And language, your phrase, gives shape to that. Good. Anybody else? We can move on or we'll stay with this here in a second.
I wonder if it is a bit of a piece with the first poem in a way, because a lot of these very specific images of an infant that she brings up have a dreamlike quality. They come and disappear, and I wonder to a certain extent if, in retrospect, a part of the reason not to dream in the first poem is because there's more than simply a giddy white and violet dream, but a certain amount of painful reflection in it.
Yeah.
It's actually easier to deal with the frying onions and dealing with the garbage and so on.
Yeah. Ooh, that's nice. And you say something, I guess, about good art, that art in a context speaks one thing or many things, and then out of context, you know, just this poem, it still speaks and clearly, but it speaks differently then. Yeah.
It's like that's the really two women getting copies of the poem to support their.
Yeah. Point. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Just, yeah.
That's a
in there. In, yeah. Yeah. Well,
that speaks of the luxury. What you're talking about speaks of the luxury beyond. Of feeling, of dreams, of mm-hmm. all these unwanted pregnancies,
mm-hmm.
you know. There's a luxury in following through on a dream. There's a luxury in having these children. I don't know how to express it. That she can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
She can't afford the luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's financial, emotional,
yeah,
right. or any of the things you
yeah.
said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. You guys want to come back to Augustana with me? You mean, you're one? Okay, let's shift gears and look to, I think, one of the other voices of American black poetry out of the 60s is, let's see where to start. These pages are kind of upside down and backwards. On page 2, on 300 there, where it says, a poem to complement other poems. I won't dump this one on anybody else because this to read because it's a strange kind of rhythm. Remember the phrase or the title given to this session, Black Poetry, A Voice for Vision. And especially, I mean, I think all poets do this. So I won't even say especially, scratch that word. The poets, the black poets of the 60s and early 70s, too, T-O-O. We're concerned with tipping our vision of the world upside down and to saying maybe your values and the things that you have long held dear aren't the things you should hold dear. I think as a Christian, looking at secular quotes around that word, I don't think there is such a thing, but a lot of people do, at secular literature, it's very Christian to turn the world upside down. In fact, that seemed to be the mission of Christ, you know, over and over again. Look, folks, you don't value the things, you know, the right things. You know, you can't live by bread alone, and you live by, and you get the point. Well, here's Don L. Lee once again, a poem to complement other poems. Change, like if you were a match, I would light into something beautiful. Change, change for the better into a real, real together thing. Change from a make-believe nothing on cornmeal and water. Change, change from the last draft to the first. Maxwell House did. Change. Change was a programmer for IBM. Thought him was a brown computer. Change. colored is something written on southern outhouses. Change. Greyhound did. I mean, they got restrooms on buses. Change, 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 nigger. Saw a nigger hippie, him wanted to be different. Changed. Saw a nigger liberal, him wanted to be different. Changed. Saw a nigger conservative, him wanted to be different. Changed. Niggers, don't you know that niggers are different? Change, a double change. Nigger wanted a double zero in front of his name, a license to kill. Niggers are licensed to be killed. Change, a negro, something pigs eat. Change, I say change into a real black righteous aim, like I don't play saxophone, but that doesn't mean I don't dig train. That's Coltrane, a saxophone jazz artist. Change. Here you're coming, but your steps are too loud. Change. Even a lamppost changes, nigger. Change. Stop being an instant yes machine. Change. Niggers don't change, they just grow. That's a change. Bigger and better niggers. Change into a necessary black self. Change like a gas meter gets higher. Change like a blues song talking about a righteous tomorrow. Change like a tax bill getting higher. Change like a good sister getting better. Change like knowing wood will burn. Change, know the real enemy. Change, change, nigger. Standing on the corner thought him was cool. Him still standing there. It's wintertime. Him cool. Change, know the real enemy. Change, him wanted to be a TV star. Him is. 10 o'clock news. Wanted, wanted. Nigger stole some lemon and lime popsicles. Thought them were diamonds. Change, nigger, change. Know the real enemy. Change. Is you or is you ain't. Change. Now, now, change. For the better, change. Read a change. Live a change. Read a black poem. Change. Be the real people. Change. Black poems will change. Know the real enemy. Change. Know the real enemy. Change. Your enemy. Change. Know the real. Change. Know the real enemy. Change. Change. Know the real enemy. The real enemy. The real, real enemy. Change. Your the enemies. Change your change. Change your enemy. Change your enemy. Know the real enemy. The world's enemy. Know them. Know them. Know them. The real enemy. Change your enemy. Change your change. Change. Change your enemy. Change. 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 Change your change. Change. Change your mind, nigger. That is out of a whole genre, I think, of what are called stage poems. And I think black artists, especially again in the 60s and the 70s, designed their poetry to be performed and to be immediately volatile and immediately poignant. Rather than, they're not so contemplative, but when we contemplate them, they are indeed worthy of contemplation. So, react to that one. That stage poem is just, and all this, it undoes a lot of our concepts about what poetry is. I mean, the white critics jumped all over this stuff. That isn't what poetry is. I mean, listen to Keats. And, I've read Keats. Keats is great.
But that wonderful rhythm of the change and how that was interspersed. It was
really what does that rhythm do to you? To you? I mean, just, you're...
Put you on edge.
Yeah. Well, it's a pump-up kind of thing.
Yeah, pump-up. Put you on edge. I'm not so sure a black poet wouldn't want us on edge.
Keeps you excited. It's very similar to the group that sang Friday night. The gospel.
The Total Experience group.
Total Experience group. Yeah. I mean, it's just constant
motion.
Rhythm. Constant. Beat, heartbeat that's just moving.
Yeah, indeed a change from the normal Lutheran worship service. Yeah. And so we're on the edge of our, that's good.
It's kind of like subliminal visuals that flash in front of you.
What are some of those subliminal visions that flash in front of you? Try not to look back, see if you can just remember them. If you can't, no big deal, but. No, you remember any of those?
Enemy.
Huh?
The real enemy.
Yeah, who's the real enemy? We don't ever know that. But I'll just give you a little, I guess, a context for tradition. The real enemy is, for this guy, is whoever it is. Well, I will tell you, we do know it from the poem. Who's the real enemy?
It's the mind of the Negro.
The mind of, not of the Negro. It's hard to say.
Change your mind, Negro.
Yeah, right, that's all I meant. It's the mind of the Negro. You're not a nigger. Whoever told you you were a nigger is the real enemy. And whoever made, and you yourself change your mind, that you become your own enemy if you buy into that. Good. Other things.
But you don't necessarily in the beginning of the poem think that he's talking about the enemy being the nigger mind.
No.
You start off by thinking it could be Whitey.
Well, it... Good.
You know.
And you're right. Who's been saying nigger for 250 years? Yeah.
Who kept you out of the bathroom, the restroom?
Right. Yeah. Change. I mean, even Greyhound's got restrooms now. And restrooms alludes to a whole lot of things, whether it's on Greyhound or where, doesn't it? And we know that. Yeah, that's good.
But isn't that the voice of the 60s when this was written, was change, particularly for anybody who was alive?
Yeah.
And for everybody else in regard to thinking about it.
Yeah. This, for sure, I mean, I have said in another session that I think, this is my personal opinion, but partly supported by professional analysis, the only approach a white person can take to black literature is radical. I mean, it's the only approach you can take. In the simplest level, it's radical in that you undo the canon. You know, the canon that is normally American literature is expanded considerably if you add black literature to it. And so that's part of what I mean, but it's more than that. The radical change has to do with, and I think this is one of the things that the black poets, but all poets do, but right now, black poets especially speak to us about, is what is the vision of humanness? What is the vision of what it is to be human and the way to live in our culture and society? And that's a very Christian concept, because Jesus asked the same question. What is it to be human in this society? I mean, even the kind of Messiah he was expected to be was their vision of, well, to be free means to get Rome off our back and to have our own economic and political control. And he, no, that's not really what I'm about. And he could have been, he didn't. He said, I'm about, there's another vision of what it is to be whole and healthy and, the comparative word is, to be free, right? It wasn't political and economic freedom that he brought. So the poet, and I would argue with, well, never mind. The poet untips that vision upside down too. What other things get tipped upside down in this poem? I mean, he's speaking to blacks, but I'm white, and I like this, and I got something here that. Yeah.
I get a lot of sense of that. That I guess knowing the time is that he saw people trying to change, and it was all superficial. You know, change. You want to be cool, and you stand on the corner, and then you're really cool because it's winter and it's cold outside.
Yep.
And then he says, know the real enemy. Read a change, live a change, read a black poem, change, be the real people.
Yeah.
You know, so get beyond that superficiality of just wanting to work for IBM. That doesn't make you a real black person just working for IBM.
Yeah.
Or being a newscaster, it's deeper than that.
Yeah.
Be out of self.
Pardon me?
Be out of self.
Yeah, nice phrase. And to work in IBM, that's what it means to be successful. That's what it is to be human in this, is to get a job, move along in this case, the corporate ladder, and you are living. I love the phrase. It's the best one in maybe all literature. You shall not live. How can I say it's best in all literature? You shall not live by bread alone. But it applies, you know, what's bread mean? It means a whole lot of things.
It's almost, you know, it's a warning to say, don't buy what the, quote, whiteys are saying is success.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And because if you buy that, you haven't changed at all.
Yep. Good. What are some of the things that Whitey has said were success? Diamonds? The owned, right? I mean, that's one of the images. Wanted. Nigger stole some lemon and lime popsicles, thought them were diamonds. That's good, but... Diamonds, IBM, so that whole, okay, good. Other images that are
TV
there.
TV star.
What?
TV star.
Yeah.
Total TV star. Illusion he's talking about.
You've got it made if you're a TV star, or famous, or important.
James Bond, a big famous detective.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. Want to double James Bond. Yeah,
okay. And all that he represents, you've got it made if you've done that.
I like I don't play saxophone, but that doesn't mean I don't dig train.
What do you make of that?
Well, just because you're black doesn't mean you play a saxophone. But I mean, you know, it's like there's these images that, oh, well, black people do this, or black people do that. All black people have great bodies and are good at sports. All these illusions that people have. Well, I'm black. I don't play a saxophone, but I still like saxophones.
Yeah.
That's
good. Yeah, good. Anybody else?
I just thought the whole rhythm of the poem, the way that as it went on in the last section, was almost like just there was such a rate, such a rhythm that it was like people, you had an image of people getting onto a train and going faster and faster and getting more and more intense.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm glad you caught that. Yeah. Here's a good poem. I won't give you the whole thing. I just happen to know it. It's a poem that we all probably have read and liked very much. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood, and on it goes like that. Change, nigger, change, 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 change. Tony, really, let me, on it goes. This is where English teachers, and I've never understood, I do now, but I didn't understand when English teachers told me, art is life. I said, oh yeah, really, well, that's cool. Art becomes life when the experience of the poem or whatever it is itself a changing experience. For instance, in this poem, Two Roads Diverge in the Yellow Wood, we've got a concept of what poetry is, right? And the poet, that's part of his message, is to undo that concept of what poetry is and say, I'm going to give you a whole other way to look at it. This is a poem. No, it isn't, said all the white critics. Well, we don't have to even argue, live the question. Is this a poem? Again, in my own understanding as a student of literature, literary criticism would say, thou shalt not live by bread alone. And bread alone is, in this case, could be a certain given absolute set of criteria under which poetry is defined as poetry. And all of a sudden, we're going to undo that thing too, because the black poet is a voice of vision. Let's consider something else. Who decided for me that poetry is only in this category?
Well, the poetry also is timeless, has a timelessness to it.
Sure.
In this piece, whether coming out of the 60s or coming out of the near 90s, is very real today as much as is real today as it was in the 60s when it was written.
Yeah. That's very good. And listen to the hero of the New Testament walking around saying, know the real enemy, change, know the real enemy. I can see him doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, who's the real enemy to Jesus? The scribes, the church, the institution. That's 2,000 years ago. Dostoevsky says it in The Brothers Karamazov. I love this line Dale and I were just talking about the other day. Jesus comes back, and the church comes to Jesus and says, why have you come to hinder us? You're screwing up our whole plan. Change, know the real enemy. Change, change. This is a timeless idea. Not only 60s and 90s, but and that makes it great poetry. That'd be my argument. Anyway. Anybody else?
I've been to Ingrid. Ingrid is reading mm-hmm. stories, black stories, and the things that you have done. And they're a good story. They tell, give us an idea about how the blacks live and their feelings. But even deeper than that, to me, they are truth for humanity. I mean, not just the black, but all of us. It speaks to...
Yeah.
Makes me cry to even think about it.
Yeah.
It does.
Good, it should. I've choked up twice reading stuff in class here. Lorraine Hansberry, who wrote Raisin in the Sun, which you might have seen at one time or another in your life, was asked after she wrote that... Somebody said to her, a literary critic, I mean, Lorraine, this isn't a poem just about Negroes, this is about real people. And her response was, I never considered that blacks were real people. And that kind of goes along with the universality of black poets speak to the black experience. And one of the things I think we learn as white people is, well, we share a lot. We have a lot of things in common. And systems and structures in our culture and society prevent us from recognizing and sharing those things that we have in common. That's why Holden is wonderful with this whole concept. Now, I'm going to introduce every black literature course I teach. I haven't done this, but I'm going to from now on. Students, this is a class in celebration, to celebrate difference and make it more emotional than it is, and then I'll really have a zoo. Okay, anybody else? Yeah.
Sometimes we carefully choose a word or phrase as a climax or as seasoning,
In this case, he takes a word that he knows better than anybody else, the word nigger,
yeah,
and just keeps shoving it and shoving it and shoving
it. Yeah, right. And that's, as a white person, I have a hard time reading that word. You know, change your mind. There's a, I don't know even who wrote it, maybe somebody, the student as nigger. It was a book that was pretty popular in the early 70s. And it meant all students with a nigger mind, that is, a slave mind. It doesn't matter who the author is. I didn't even read the book. I just liked the title. So, okay. Anybody else? Yeah.
I have a question that you haven't talked about here a little bit. He says, niggers don't change, they just grow. That's a change. And then he talks about things that grow like gas meters and tax bills. And good sisters, and wood burning. I don't exactly know what those lines are quite about.
The lines, it's about 10 from the bottom there. Niggers don't change, they just grow. That's a change. Bigger and better. Niggers change into a necessary black self. Change them. Like the gas meter gets higher, like Blue's song talking about a righteous tomorrow. Anybody? Yeah, as a teacher, you can always do that.
He's kind of defining change, it seems to me. I mean, yeah, you can grow. That's a great change. You'll become just a big nigger.
Yeah.
That's good. That's not the change I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting looking up at all the things that you wrote up on the board there. They are so white. Can you think of a whiter guy than James Bond? And it's like he's saying, you know, you don't have to be white to be a success.
Yeah.
These don't have to be your goals, you know.
Yep. That's good, and that's real good analysis. A gas meter gets higher, but it's still a gas meter, right? A blues song talking about a righteous tomorrow. Change like a tax bill getting higher, still a tax bill. Like a good sister getting better. Annoying wood. Yeah.
See, but he doesn't just say be bigger, and he says bigger and better. So I don't think he's saying that's necessarily bad.
No, I think that's what you're saying, that change means more than just growing. Change means, that's what the whole poem is about, and then each line of a poem needs to be interpreted in the context of the whole, and this whole poem is about, folks, I'd like to have you undo your vision of what it is to be human. And just, you know, going from 5 to 10 to 45, that's not enough. You know, we all do that. Change. Change your mind. Now, you guys are really wonderful. This is fun. Oh, I got 11:46. Just to point out, if you're in the VC Wednesday night when this whole show is on, this poetry show, the poem here, but he was cool, or he even stopped for green lights, I do that one, but it's really about cool, super cool, real cool. He didn't know that after the revolutions of the 60s took place, that to be black is to be hot. Not Mr. Cool, but we gotta, and once again, the vision of the black poet, and then we can end on that, or put a comma anyway. The vision of the black poet is change your vision. I mean, his vision is that we should change our vision of what it is to be human in this life. I was going to say society and culture, but love it. Thank you. You're a wonderful audience. This is a lot of fun.